No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Tonight, recording on a Tuesday night, is I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, one of the NFL wire sites for the USA Today family of sites, and my co-host is Seth Cox from AvengersOfTheBirds.com and the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. As you can probably imagine, if you're following the Cardinals, all is not well in Cardinals land. Is that not correct, Seth?
Oh, football's going on still? I thought it was over.
Exactly. The Cardinals are coming off another loss, their second straight, and now they are 1-3. A 17-13 loss to the Los Angeles Rams on Sunday. Do we call this a Cardinals podcast anymore, or are we just talking about what we do on our free time now, because we don't have any Cardinals to talk about?
Well, you're going on a cruise, and I coach multiple football games a week. So that's basically our lives right now. But I mean, we still find time to write about the 1-3 Arizona Cardinals.
Yep. So that we're still doing that. I mean, the Cardinals are going forward, but the sky is falling for fans, although they are not panicking, as Bruce Arians said. But they're coming off a 17-13 loss to the Los Angeles Rams, who in this strange reality are now 3-1 at the top of the NFC West. So we're going to talk a bit about what's going on. The first, we have a whole bunch of stuff going on. So the Cardinals are 1-3. They have a concussed quarterback. They've got a Thursday night game. So when you hear this on Wednesday or Thursday, it'll be game time already. A whole bunch of things. The Cardinals had a whole bunch of injuries. And so here is the rundown. So let's start off with the rundown of things that have happened. Well, first off, last week, they added the long snapper. We knew about that when we did our last show. They added Aaron Brewer. They did sign Ryan Quigley, the punter, to replace Drew Butler while he was hurt. And what would they do to do that? All they did was cut, you know, one of their draft picks, Marquis Christian, that drafted out of the fifth round. He was the guy that Adrian Wilson found. The plan was at least to sign him to the practice squad after he cleared waivers. The problem was he didn't clear waivers and was picked up and claimed by the Los Angeles Rams. So goodbye draft pick. A guy that they had, actually, he was a guy that the team kind of raved about. Whether there's something else there or not, I did hear from him, actually. I checked up with him if the plan was the practice squad, and he said it was. So who knows? And so that came Sunday. Cardinals lose, and apparently everyone got hurt. Carson Palmer goes down with a concussion with about 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So Drew Stanton comes in. Carson Palmer is now going through the concussion protocol, and it seems unlikely that he will start on Thursday night against the San Francisco 49ers. Also injured during that game was running back Chris Johnson with a groin injury. He has been sent to injured reserve and is having hernia surgery. Cue the return of Kerwin Williams. Safety Tyvon Branch has been playing in the slot all season so far. A groin injury all last week that limited him in practice. He played and got hurt during the game. He goes down, same injury as Johnson. He's also having hernia surgery. He goes to injured reserve. And so Tyvon Branch, Chris Johnson to injured reserve. Last week, Troy Nicholas went to injured reserve as well. So we're starting to see kind of the banged up Cardinals again. To replace those guys on the roster, they bring back Britton Golden to play special teams. He was on the practice squad. They elevate Zach Dysart from the practice squad, which tells you that should be, if there's a sign enough to think that Carson Palmer is probably not going to start on Thursday, it's that. It's the fact that they elevated Zach Dysart to be the backup quarterback. So, Drew, don't get hurt. You've got a history of it. Please don't get hurt. So Zach Dysart could be playing quarterback should anything happen over the next day or so, during the game.
Remember, like, right when we were talking cuts and everything, and these two guys that are on this podcast were like, it'd be crazy just to keep two quarterbacks because these guys are perpetually hurt. And then they went and kept two quarterbacks.
Yeah,
we did a good job.
Yeah, one of the polls that they had on the radio today was about Drew Stanton. How confident they are? What was it? 13% said, "Ugh, why didn't we keep Barkley?" Not that Barkley would have. Guys, Ryan Lindley's still available. After all, Ryan Lindley is still available. So all else fails, bring him back, and he can lose a game the best of anyone. So
exactly.
I mean, Carson Palmer's losing games. So a whole bunch of roster moves. That what this means, Drew Stanton's likely going to start on Thursday. Doesn't mean much for David Johnson, but does mean that Andre Ellington is going to get Chris Johnson's carries. And this is a small hallelujah. It looks like Andre Ellington's going to be off kickoff returns. Praise all that is good, because I've been waiting for that. We're probably going to see Tyrann Mathieu back in his old position there, playing in the slot. We'll see how much that is, if it's going to be the entire game. Brazarian said that they were working Marcus Cooper in that area. They're probably thinking about some other stuff, but it says at least for some, Mathieu was going to be back there. Only now it's necessitated a bit more because Branch got hurt. And they added a guy named Christian Bryant back to the practice squad. I don't know a thing about him. So,
and you forgot about Cap Cappy.
Oh yeah, Cap Cappy, some dude. Another dude.
The best part about that was that you had Arizona Sports wrote about him, right? And I went and looked at their article, and they didn't even have a picture of the dude.
So you can't find. I mean, we're limited for photos. Sometimes you kind of have to make do with what you got. So there's kind of the background. We're going to talk about sort of what moving forward, the reaction to these roster moves. We're going to talk about the game reaction. We're going to talk about the expectations for the season, how they change now with the Cardinals 1-3. And then we'll look briefly at the San Francisco game. And, you know, hopefully things get well. But before we do that, I'd like to let you know about how you can get a boatload of money betting games at mybookie.ag. You guys know, football fans, you know who's going to win the game, right? It's time to put your money where your mouth is. Get some money on the game and score a big win today. Join thousands of online players and start betting at mybookie.ag. And, you know, I'm urging you to go there because they pay. You're wasting your time betting anywhere else. They have in-game live betting, so you can even place a bet after kickoff. And unlike some other websites, you might find MyBookie offers fast, no-hassle payouts when you win. So join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit with 100% bonus if you use the promo code Cardinals to activate the offer. So visit MyBookie.ag today or call 844-900-BETS, B-E-T-S. You play, you win, you get paid. Expert or rookie, you got to check out MyBookie. Sign up today. And let's talk about now. So back on Rise Up Seaward, we're going to talk about is there anything we can read into these roster moves other than, you know, they were talking about on the radio today, and I thought it was curious. And I can understand sort of why they did it, but how badly do you think that the Cardinals are going to regret cutting Marquis Christian?
They already do, right? Like, they're not going to say they do, but they already do. Like, that was a dumb cut from the jump, thinking that he was going to get by both Los Angeles and Seattle in the waiver claims. So I thought that was silly. I just don't understand why they drafted all these guys and then didn't, you know, and then cut them. Like, I mean, Harlan Miller made it to the practice squad, so that's good. You know, but like Cole Toner.
Well, let's talk about that, because Sunday's game, the only rookie, the only draft pick that was active was Evan Bain, the only one. And he said, you know what he is? He's the backup long snapper. He's their emergency long snapper right now. So Rob Candice, inactive. You know, part of that's the injury, so he hasn't missed any time, but he hasn't been on the injury report all this week. Brennan Williams went from starting to playing some to not playing at all to inactive. Marky Christian, cut. Cole Toner, inactive. Harlan Miller, cut and brought back to the practice squad. I even probably saw me joke about on Twitter today with the roster moves of which draft pick are they cutting today?
Exactly. Well, honestly, and I legit text this to because after the all the we already knew that they were going to sign Kerwin Williams and elevate Zach Dysart. You know, we didn't know about Britton Golden getting brought up to the roster, but that meant they were going to have to make some moves. And I legit text my friends. I said I would not be shocked if they put Kim DJ on IR because it just it's one of those Arians things where he just doesn't have the patience for the injury and the ineffectiveness apparently. So, you know, why not, you know, just put him on IR and then bring him back next year when he's ready or, you know, give him 8 weeks. That way you have, you know, in 8 weeks. But I think the fact that it sounds like both Chris and or CJ and Tyvon's groin issues were pretty serious. So, you know, it's just, it's interesting that, you know, Ed Stinson's not exactly playing well. Josh Morrow's hurt now, and he's not exactly playing, you know, lights out, and he plays a little bit different of a position, but you look at all of what's going on and you just go, how can he not get on the field? Like, is he that bad in practice or is he that much of a knucklehead? Because that was the thing. Like, if he's that much of a knucklehead, like you and I even knew that he was a knucklehead, right? Like everybody knew that he was a knucklehead. So then why did you draft him? If you knew this, or if this was going to be an issue leading to you not wanting to play him, right? Like, that's my whole thing. So I don't know. It's definitely
I think it comes down to Bruce Arians and his training camp philosophy. If you miss too much of training camp, guess what you're not going to get to do? You're not going to play. And, you know, he missed a ton of training camp just because of that high ankle sprain and those things will dog you all year. But, you know, I think since he didn't get the reps and then on top of that week one, I mean, he did the stupid offsides call before New England is even set. It kind of put him in the doghouse on top of the injury, and he's missed time because of injury. The ankle tweaked again. I think they're kind of grooming him for maybe later than the season. But they're at the point now. They sort of need him because the D-line is banged up. And again, I question. They got 9 defensive linemen. Why do they only have 5 that are active? What are they seeing these other guys that they couldn't just find in another defensive lineman next year? Because it's not like with their scheme that you need big production people. You need cogs in there. So, you know, Xavier Williams played well when he was in there, but even he was inactive. Pierre Olson, I can never remember which order his name goes.
Pierre Olson. No, it's Olson Pierre.
But why 9 linemen? I've been very, very puzzled overall with the
roster person,
the way they put the roster together. I mean, if you're going to end up cutting Drew Butler, why didn't you do it in the beginning?
Well, our good buddy, great reader, listener to the podcast, Gungus, Revenge of the Birds reader for long
and
before.
Cap expert extraordinaire.
Yes, and long before even Jess took over. You know, he wrote that they were so cash-strapped that keeping him until they either reached an injury settlement or until he got healthy and then cutting Quigley would save them money because as soon as they cut him or put him on IR, his salary became guaranteed. So he got paid out the rest of that salary.
True.
So that and they were down to like what, $800,000 or $1.8 million or something like that. So they had no money So that was his idea and speculation, and likely accurate because he's excellent at that stuff. And so I read that and I was like, oh, that makes sense. Like, you have to keep him on the roster until you either A, reach an injury settlement, which they did, or B, convert, you know, salary to signing bonus and free up cap space, which they did. So they did both of those things, and now it makes sense.
Well, so yeah, pretty much. That's just a whole bunch of fun things going on with the Cardinals. You know, the timing of the whole thing, and I think I want to talk about this more when we talk about the 49ers, but Tyrann Mathieu now declaring himself ready to play in the slot. I'm still kind of, I'm not sure what the vibe is. I'm not sure if it was he hasn't been in the slot because he knows he shouldn't be, and now it's just, okay, I can't feel sorry for myself. It's time for me to step up. So I haven't been able to tell yet if it was more the team holding him back, himself holding himself back but being frustrated in the new role, or what. But it looks like, and hopefully that means he's in a good place and that he can make an impact there from there. That's what I'm hoping, because the comment by John Clayton, who's a sideline reporter for ESPN, said that Mathieu looked like a shell of himself, like a 35-year-old version of himself out there. But maybe that was just because he was out of position. Patrick Peterson said on Tuesday that, you know, it'll bring the identity back to the Cardinals defense with Ty in the slot. And, you know, it seems as odd as that, but maybe he is that sort of Troy Polamalu glue. That, because when Polamalu would left the field, the Pittsburgh Steelers defense back in the day, it would sort of fall apart when he was out there and playing what he doing what he does. And if you put Mathieu back in the slot, maybe that makes things, maybe the little off things that have been wrong with the Cardinals defense get fixed. It seems magical and weird, but maybe it's true.
Yeah, it could be. Definitely could be. And it's something to watch and, you know, to kind of focus on going forward, if that's a place or if that is a key in the growth of the team and maybe the defense. But, you know, statistically speaking, now you and I might disagree with this, but statistically speaking, they're playing fine defensively. It's just that they don't really look like it.
They don't look like a great team. They're playing good defense, but they're not making game-changing plays. Like, they'll stop. Like, look at that game. In fact, let's hold that thought and come after the next segment. So next up on Rises Up Sea Red, we're going to talk about the game against the Rams. What went wrong? We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and we're going to talk about that game, that 17-13 loss, and we're going to bring back that point that Seth was talking about the statistically the Cardinals defense isn't playing badly. They're not playing at an elite level, but they're doing a lot of things well. So what is wrong? They stop. They hold Todd Gurley to 30-something yards in the game. But
they allow Case Keenum to have his second or third best statistical output in his career.
And so it's like, that's just the thing. So they execute their game plan, but they still manage to lose. What is it? Can you put your finger on something?
I think it's a lot of guys that aren't playing for the team right now. Does that make sense? Like, it's more of a lot of individuals. And I love Mathieu, and I love his fire and his belief in himself and all of that stuff. But was his, you know, oh, I'm ready. Like, I need to get back closer to the line of scrimmage. You know, I need to start be making plays, blah, blah, blah. Was not all of that very, like, not what you want to hear when you're 1-3? You know, does that make sense? Like, you don't want to hear, I need to be doing this, this, and this, as opposed to, like, this is where we're, you know, like, oh, they need to put me closer to the line of scrimmage so I can make more plays. Like, it just – I just feel like a lot of guys are looking at this season as like about them as opposed to about the team, where last year it was, you know, a hugely team-based type thing. And so it's just a little bit different in my opinion right now.
And that's an interesting comment thing with Matthew, because the way very subtly when he said it, because he says, I think where it is a couple of things. One, I think mentally, I don't know if he was ready to go back into the box, though that's where he wants to play, because he's comfortable playing there. Because, hey, we're 1-3. I got to stop feeling, I can't sit and feel sorry for myself. He knows he's a leader on that defense and kind of what he needs to be making plays for the defense to work. So I don't see it so much as a selfish thing, except for the part I find as interesting is that I can't feel sorry for myself. Like, so does he in his mind or in his heart want to play in the spot in the slot, but know in his mind, maybe that knee's not ready or he's still looking like the little 2014 version of Matthew where he just didn't move with the same thing, even though according to the coaches during the preseason and training camp and in practices, he was flying around like he was before. We're not seeing him fly around. We're seeing him out there in a different role. And so I'm okay with it. I'm okay with saying that it's time because, you know, he's one of the leaders in the defense and is as a leader on the defense as a all pro. He's expected to make plays, and if he's not making plays, I think he's in the like, I'm not mad. I can't make plays where I'm, you know, wandered around deep in center field. Even though Rashad Johnson managed to do it, he's the one who led the team in interceptions, you know, consistently. He was the guy back there making, you know, getting those tipped passes or those balls thrown straight at him because he knew where it was supposed to be. The comment about the individuals. And that kind of goes with the long. Patrick Peterson's playing well. Tony Jefferson's playing really well. Calais Campbell's doing all right. Marcus Golden and Chandler Jones have been, you know, have been really good. And Chandler Jones has been nothing short of great when it comes to pressuring the quarterback. But yeah, there's no cohesiveness, and there's just enough mistakes that it'll drive you mad. They held Gurley, so they got 3rd-and-7, 3rd-and-8, even 3rd-and-12, and then they bring out this new dime package, 6 defensive backs, this new nickel package. They got 6 DBs or 5 DBs, and they bring it. It's kind of a light interior line. So they've got Calais Campbell as the only lineman. They bring in Okafor. And so basically you've got 5 linebackers and 1 down lineman. And for some reason, something always messes up in the back end, and they complete. I'll have to go back and chart, but it seems uncanny. It's like when I chart those plays, when they go to that lighter or faster formation up front, something messes up down the field, and that's almost always a conversion.
And it would make sense because it's one of those things where, like, you put a lot of players on the field, and, you know, we talked about this before, and I think there's maybe a lack of trust still. Maybe it's not selfishness, and maybe that's bad on my part for saying that, but maybe there's a lack of trust that we're seeing occur. And it, you know, really stems from the fact that they're working in Tyvon Branch, they're working in DJ Swearinger, they're working in Marcus Cooper or Brandon Williams. You know, they're working in all these guys on the defensive line who have played a little bit, yeah, but now they're in bigger roles. You know, even like a Corey Peters and Chandler Jones, like these are all guys that you're not exactly comfortable with, right? Like you haven't built the same rapport. And so, like you said, the individual components, like you look at it, Jones and Golden are playing statistically well. Mentors look good. Peters has looked good. Peterson has looked good. Matthew's been okay. Tyvon Branch has had good moments. And Tony Jefferson has had good moments. But as a unit, they seem out of sync and out of sorts. And for some reason, like you said, there is always a play. Maybe not every series, but, you know, at least once a quarter, it seems like there is a play that beats him, you know, and it's something as simple as Marcus Cooper's play. He's in good position. He's not the best ball skill guy. That's why, you know, he got replaced in Kansas City, and, you know, he makes a play on the ball instead of just saying, all right, I gave up an 11-yard pass or whatever it was. You know, we'll get it back next time. Instead, he makes a play on the ball. Tony Jefferson overruns it, and now Brian Quick's off to the races. You know, and it's something as simple as that. Like, two guys made the right reads on the play. They just didn't make the right decisions. They both made the wrong judgment on how to make the play, or, you know, stop the player, and it ended up, you know, obviously being a huge play in the game.
The offensive side of the ball too. Now, I'm going to point to this. I'm going to bang on this table. I'm going to climb on that mountain. Shot. What did we see again last week? We saw the same thing happen. They gave up an early touchdown and didn't come back right away. So when they give up a big play early, things go sideways. Now, they did recover well at the end of the second quarter, and they got the game tied. They even took the lead. But again, the front runner in them, they're a great front running team. They're great with a lead. They're great when they get off to a, you know, a 2-score lead or a 10-point lead or respond. They get a defensive stop or give up only a field goal, and they respond with a touchdown. When the Cardinals give up an early touchdown, they get a touchdown down, things just tend to go sideways. And we saw it again. You saw it against, you know, what did we see? We saw it against New England. We saw it against Buffalo. We saw it against Los Angeles. So, again, this is a team, and for some reason, they're just not executing well offensively in the first quarter. When they start fast, they're incredibly good. They're just not starting fast at all.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you watch it, and they seem like they're in a rhythm at some points. And then something goes wrong. And, you know, I can tell you this from, like, my Pee Wee football game. And I know it's Pee Wee football compared to NFL and whatever. But in my Pee Wee football game this weekend, literally every first down play we ran, we gained at least 4 yards, which is great. Like, that's great. But every second down play, I shouldn't say every, but half the second down plays we ran, we got a bad snap or a penalty or something that got us out of rhythm. And then, so then all of a sudden, you know, you and I have talked about this on the show before, being on time on offense. And all of a sudden, you know, you're in third and 12 and you have 10 and 11 year olds running a power run based scheme. And they're just not going to be able to gain 12 yards in two plays. So now you're, you know, kind of up a creek as a play caller. I think you're seeing similar things to that in Arizona. You're seeing they're in a position to make a third down conversion. Then they have a drop. And then, like you said, then they get behind or something happens defensively. And so all of a sudden they're behind and it's like, well, forget this. Like, we got to throw the ball all around the field. And, you know, we talked about it on the wrap-up show Sunday night. When you throw the ball 47 times, and I'll just look at Carson Palmer's pass attempts. When Carson Palmer throws the ball 36 times in, you know, what, in his 64 snaps or whatever it was, that's way too many against the Rams. When you throw the ball against the Rams, you play into their hands because their defensive line is geared up to rush the passer. They have maybe the best defensive line when it comes to rushing the quarterback in the entire NFL. And you're going to drop back 7 steps and try to rush. You know, people want to get upset with DJ Humphries and Jared Valdir. You know what? Nobody in the NFL is going to stop those guys if you're dropping back in 7-step drops. Like that play they ran when it was like second and something, I can't even remember, and Chris Johnson whiffed on the it was early in the first or second quarter, and Chris Johnson whiffed on the like blitz pickup, and Palmer stepped up and just got pummeled. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, why on earth did they run that play? Like, that doesn't even seem like a smart play to run against them, because the play action to Rams is nothing. They'll run by a handoff because they're going to go pin their ears back and go get the quarterback. They're going to let their linebackers make the play on the running back. But, you know, if you make that elongated drop back for your quarterback, guess what? By the time he turns around, oh, well, look, there's two Rams right in his face. And it just – it's baffling that we're having these issues and seeing these problems every season with the Rams, at least one game, right? Like, that's weird.
Yeah, this – it's very, very puzzling what they did. And Arians actually talked about some of the and I think it was Goodwin today, Harold Goodwin, the offensive coordinator, talked about some of the things they'll get in a rhythm. And then something, whether it's a penalty, whether it's a drop, or when they're down in the red zone, Arians pointed to where David Johnson, they ended up with a negative running play. It was the -4 play. You know, had he gained 2 yards, so they're at the 4, they're at the 5. If he gains 2 yards, they probably run again. But then they lose 4, and they put them in, you know, the play calling then becomes different. And you know, they had to do their obligatory throw to John Brown at the corner of the end zone for some reason, because that's the guy you want at the corner of the end zone on balls that you have to throw up for grabs. Makes sense to me, right?
Yeah. And we've talked about that before. Like, that decision making is so odd, but it's so consistent with what they have done, you know, every season. Like, we've been asking why on earth they are running fades to John Brown for all 3 seasons he's been here, and it's not a shot at John Brown. We just don't understand. It's like, man, you got all these talented big receivers and we're going with John Brown. Like,
when he's, especially because the only way he gets that is if there's separation and you can loft it over the top, because he doesn't go up and get the ball. Very rarely has he ever gone up and gotten the ball on some play.
No.
And it, I can point to maybe one or two games. I think one was in Cleveland. Or maybe one was in Pittsburgh last year in this really big game. He actually went up and took a ball out of the air. You notice, and it was pointed out to someone, that one interception when he had his, instead of playing defensive back, he had his hands down at his waist waiting for the ball to land there. And Jermaine Johnson just took it away. He's not, I don't even know. I can't even wonder, because I know Bruce Arians is a much, 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 much smarter football man than I am, of course. I mean, the cliche that says he's forgotten more football than I'll ever know, yes, that is definitely the case, but I don't understand that. I just don't understand the John Brown in the corner of the end zone, because has it ever worked when there's he's caught touchdowns in that area, but only when he was wide open.
Yeah, exactly. And that was, somebody said, oh, it was a good decision. The receiver has to just fight back for the ball. It's like, well, it's not a good decision because of time and place on the field. That's the throw you make from the 30 going, you know, 30 of the Cardinals going out, so 70 yards left to go. That be, like you said, so he can throw it out and John Brown or J.J. Nelson run under it.
Yes.
Not the throw that they make on the 25 or 35, wherever they were at, where there is there is a barrier to how far they can go before they catch the ball. That's what I didn't get about it. It was like, that just doesn't make sense. Like, Why was that the – yeah.
So let's talk about David Johnson then. Does he need to carry the ball
more? Yes.
You look at today's NFL, how many running backs get 20-plus carries in a game?
Not very many.
And that's what I point to. I'm like, yes, you say, hey, look, he's carrying the ball what – bell cow running backs are. What does he have? 17 carries was it 17 carries that he had in the game? Let me pull that up.
Yeah, I think he had 17.
So 17 carries. I mean, and if you look at the statistics, so it's, and you'd think, and they ran the ball 25 times. I've always felt, okay, that's really only 24 times because one was a screen pass to Fitz. So I've always kind of felt that the sweet spot, the kind of the magic number is 30. But we've always known that when it comes to Bruce Arians and running the ball, the only time that they're going to run the ball that much is if they have a lead, which they didn't. And so he said, give the ball to David Johnson more. Okay, he had 17 carries. He was targeted four more times. So, you know, so he got 21 touches. You don't see hardly any running back get more touches than that anymore. And so I'm not pounding the table for more carries for David Johnson necessarily, especially because, you know, what I've wanted to see is not necessarily David Johnson carry the ball 25 times. I wanted David Johnson to get 15 to 17 times and see that Chris Johnson gets 10 to 15 carries. Well, around 10 carries in there. Because when they get that, you can tell that they're on time offensively and they're moving the ball well. If they're getting snaps for Chris Johnson and getting him carries, that to me is more of an indication of how the offense is going, more than, okay, we just got to get David Johnson the ball more. Because he's still young, yes, you want to pound him, but we look at the trend of running backs, you just don't see running backs carry the ball 20, 25 times a game. And sure, you could have given the ball, what, three more times? How much more of an impact on that game had he gotten three more carries?
Well, and I think more of it is, and again, this is just me, but I think more of it has to do with the fact that the running game was so effective. That, I mean, if you take out the Fitz catch, they ran the ball 24 times for 117 yards.
Yeah.
They were moving the ball with ease on the ground. And it was just like, it just seems like sometimes that it's going so well that then Arians like, all right, well, we're running the ball really well. Now we got to throw the ball. We got to show how dominant we are on both sides. And it's like, man, just take what's working that evening. Like, I'm not disagreeing that throwing the ball is great, but that evening or that game, it looked like the running game was what was going to lead you. And this is the other thing that bothers me. The Rams took the lead with what? 4 minutes left, something like that.
Yeah.
Not very much time left.
Oh, no, let me actually. I think it had about 2:36, I think it was. Yeah,
so not very much time left. Todd Gurley still ran the ball 19 times against the Cardinals. 19 times. He had 33 yards. You can't tell me that if you take away – you don't even take away anything because I don't think Keenum took a knee, did he?
He
might have taken
one. No, he didn't. Because the Cardinals threw the interception on the last play. He took a knee at the end of the first half.
All right. So if you take out the one Keenum kneel down, which probably took yards out of him, they ran the ball 22 times for like 41 yards. That's awful. But they still ran the ball 22 times. Like, that's just staying with the game plan, saying, look, even if it's not working, we're still going to do it. Like, it may be stupid, but we're definitely going to do it. And that's where it just seems there's always a disconnect. Like, it seems like, oh, look how well this running game is working. All right, let's go ahead and throw the ball. And I saw Kent Summers and Darren Urban both tweet about it during the game. And because they ran the ball on five consecutive plays and got, I think it was like 35 yards. And then the next three plays were all pass plays. And they were like, that was a very odd sequence because they were just destroying the Rams up front. And then they threw the ball three times and had to punt. And it was like, what just happened? Like, how did that happen? Like, what happened and why did that happen? You know, type thing. And it's just one of those, it's frustrating to watch because they were so dominant in that time. And then they went with, oh, well, you know what? Let's throw the ball. This is working too well. We need to change it up a bit.
I think they outsmart themselves. I think it tends to be what happens, and they get into their game planning and they, you know, they're running the ball, but then they know based on their game plan, that's when they're supposed to pass. So they've had some success. And so they think that now it's time to then go for those bigger plays. Who knows? We see coaches outsmarting themselves all the time. Heck, you look at Arizona State. And what does Chip Lindsey do, their offensive coordinator, basically every time that they're in the red zone? They put Kalen Ballage there with the direct snap. And they ran it like 8 straight times in the red zone at some point against one of the teams. And they couldn't stop it. So they kept running the exact same thing. It must be just one of those things is that, you know, because they practice it a particular certain way or a kind of a play sequence that they run into, maybe they don't want to surprise the players. I don't know. But aside from the Rams game, next up arise of Sea Red, let's talk about expectations for the season. So now they're 1-3. Is there hope? And what should be our expectations moving forward? Do we need to change course? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, the podcast here, talking ears with the Cardinals. Seth Cox, my co-host, and I, Jess Root. Let's talk about the expectations. So the Cardinals now at 1-3. And now 2 games behind the Los Angeles Rams and the NFC West. 1 of 7, and at least here's some solace they can find. They're 1 of 7 NFC teams currently at 1-3. But 4 games of the season, they have as many losses as they did all last season. Is there hope? I mean, can you look at this team and say, oh, Super Bowl is done. There's no chance. Because I'm not there yet that there's no chance. Like I wrote the other day, though, we shouldn't talk about the Super Bowl anymore. Not at all. It's done. We're not talking about it because that's no longer the expectation for this team.
No, and, you know, you and I talked about it before the show started. I think the reality is now it is – it's a fight to make the playoffs, right? Like this is a team that, you know, we thought they were Super Bowl contenders, but now they're playoff contenders. And that's not to say that they've fallen that far or, you know, anything like that, but like, that's just the reality of the situation right now. Like they have to be able to make the playoffs to be considered Super Bowl contenders. And right now, I mean, it's a bit of a statistical stretch to expect them to make the playoffs, as you wrote about so well today.
And this is the stat that I run across is this one. It's very, very interesting. Now, this isn't talking about all the 1-3 teams or worse, but this is a particularly intriguing number that comes from this Vegas person who sends me stuff that wants me to write about and link their booking site. Since, you know, before this season, this year we actually have both the Cardinals and the Panthers. 14 times previous to this season, an NFC team that was in the NFC Championship game the previous year started the season 1-3 or worse. Only one of those teams made the playoffs. And almost all of those teams finished with 6 wins or less. So the numbers, the history is terrible. So, I mean, if we're looking at this objectively and we're not look through the lens of, hey, this team's great and they're still good and they're talented, they can do this. But if we're just looking at this team and we're looking at history, the Cardinals are done. It's going to be very difficult. Now, last year we saw, you know, the Chiefs went 1-3, started the Chiefs and the Texans both finished, started 1-3, ended up in the playoffs. But that was a different scenario. The Texans are in a terrible division. And the Chiefs rattled off, you know, 11 straight wins. That's anomalous in and of itself. So yes, it's. I think it's got to be going for the playoffs. But even so, I mean, think of this at 1-3, the next four games that they have, which are tough ones. So you've got to go on a short week to San Fran. Then you got the Jets. Then you've got the Seahawks. Then you've got the Panthers. They have to go 3-1 in that stretch just to get back to 500.
Yeah, and this was what we talked about before this.
They were supposed to be 7-0.
Right. Like, this was supposed to be they were supposed to go to, 6-0, heading to or coming home to Seattle Sunday night, and then hopefully be 7-0 as they head to Carolina. And now it's like, you know, they have a San Francisco team that hasn't, outside of the Carolina game, they haven't really played bad. I mean, they haven't played well, but they were up by 14 points this weekend before.
And they're pesky. That's the thing about them. So they came out and dominated the Rams.
Yeah.
Even in their losses, they're pesky.
They hang around.
They do.
And then, you know, the Jets, they're, you know, kind of a mirror image of the Cardinals right now in terms of just struggles to get back to where they were. But Seattle looks like they're finding their groove. And then again, mirror image Carolina. So,
and then you look at the rest of the season, you look in the schedule, like places where we were penciling in wins. Guess what? Minnesota looks like a sure loss. You know what? Atlanta doesn't look good either. So, I mean, say they go 3-1, but that's even a stretch. They go 3-1 over the next four games. They get to 4-4. That means they lose to Minnesota. They lose to, and that's if they don't lose any other game. So that puts them at 10-6. And 10-6 might get them a wild card. Might get them a wild card. Remember, we just saw 3 years ago a 10-6 team not go to the playoffs.
Man, I don't want to talk about that.
expectations are no more. Like, don't talk about this team in the Super Bowl. Don't talk about this team in home field advantage. Don't talk about – we're just trying to stack wins now. The Cardinals just need to win games to get back into the playoff picture because as of right now, they're not even in the playoff picture.
No, yeah, they're not.
So we're not even talking about seeding. We're just talking about getting into the playoff scenarios. Hopefully by midseason, they're at least in that picture because the way things are going, even if they get on a roll, they're likely in a situation where they can't take care of their own business, that they're going to be relying on other teams to do things for them to make it in, which is, wow. Just in a matter of 3 weeks, we went from talking about them, you know, winning their first 7 or 8 games to, oh my gosh, they might win 10 games, maybe, if they're good the rest of the way. That's it. They get 10 wins if they're really good the rest of the way.
Yeah, that's the tough part. Is it's a tough schedule. And like you said, with Atlanta figuring things out, it looks like Minnesota looking similar to what Denver was last year. You just, like you said, you just have to hope that this team figures out a way to start stacking wins, and they figure it out, and it's got to start, you know, it's got to start tomorrow. I mean, I know we're recording on a Tuesday night, but when people listen to this on Wednesday, it has to start tomorrow on Thursday night.
So let's talk about the San Francisco game. What's got to happen? And, you know, with Drew Stanton starting, no Chris Johnson, do they still have a better chance of winning than not winning? I mean, because I don't know what to expect from the Cardinals at this point. I speculated this. Perhaps maybe, because it seems like there's just the Cardinals are just this bit, just, you know, you put your finger and your thumb together just that much. Their focus is just a little bit off. And maybe having a guy like Carson quarterback who had an otherworldly season a season ago, that they're leaning on that or expecting him, that they know that they can lean on him to make plays for them. They got a backup in the game now. They can't expect that from Drew. As much confidence as they have in Stanton, they know they can't lean on him to win a game. hopefully, maybe, just maybe, the rest of the team, where they're making these little mistakes and even big mistakes, having their backup in for a game is just enough to recenter things and get them where it's supposed to, especially against a San Francisco team that really isn't that good. And they're missing their best player and emotional leader now in Navarro Bowman.
Yeah, and that's tough for them. Like, you know, as we know, losing, you know, that's basically the Tyrann Mathieu of their defense.
Yes.
And so it's unfortunate, and he's probably, and you don't want to speculate, but he might be done now, and that sucks because he's just one of the
all-time greats.
Yeah, he's just one of the most enjoyable guys to watch over the last, you know, decade in football. This game's really going to come down to the quarterbacks and who is able to keep their team clean. And can Drew Stanton outplayed Blaine Gabbert? Man, I don't even, like, I literally started to throw
that's
up.
That's hilarious thing to even say out loud, but yeah. the fact that we have to question that, it's...
Yeah, I started to throw up when I said it. It was not
good. Because as it was when the Cardinals won in San Francisco last year, it was an ugly game. Ugly. Yeah. Ugly, ugly game in every sense of the word. And Blaine Gabbert, to his credit, is much better than people thought he was. I thought he was just hot garbage. And what I see is a poor man's Alex Smith. So it's a guy who can make some plays. But mostly his strength is in not screwing things up.
Right. And that's kind of what the Cardinals need from good old Drew Stanton, right? So
they do. And that's what we saw when he won five games in 2014. He wasn't otherworldly. He was, you know, compared a lot to Kevin Cobb.
Yeah,
he was an okay Kevin Cobb.
Yeah, he'd made a couple throws a game, but it wasn't, you know, like you said, he wasn't out there in the Carson Palmer role, and that's what you want to see. And you kind of hit on it, and I'll take it a step further. Maybe this is as long as Palmer comes back healthy, obviously, but maybe this is a small blessing in disguise. And maybe this is a wake-up call to Bruce Arians that, hey, you have David Johnson, maybe the best running back in all of football. Let's go ahead and utilize that as much as we possibly can, and then we'll go from there. So maybe it'll be a blessing, and then they'll bring Palmer back, and they'll reduce the amount of hits he's having to take, and it could, you know, make everything a little bit better. But right now, it's going to come down to how dominant can David Johnson, the running game, and the defense be? And that's the legitimate question, because we haven't seen all three of those things in one game. And so if we don't see, you know, David Johnson get these 25 carries or 25 to 30 touches in this game, that means there was either, you know, a blowout early from one side, or there was too much reliance on Drew Stanton and Andre Ellington. If we don't see, if we see the 49ers having continued success on third down and being able to stay on time offensively, then the defense is not dominating like we need them to. And so that is what it really comes down to. What are they? Who are they? And how can they put it together? And, you know, we just haven't seen it yet.
So prediction time. I have been dead wrong on every single prediction in four games. So here's it goes in. So Cardinals are going to get a weird win. They're going to get one of those close NFC West victories. They're going to get well, but it's not going to be easy, and there will be still concerns, but they're at least going to get the win. That's my prediction for Thursday night, that it's not going to be pretty. They're going to get the win. They're going to get a little bit better, but the concerns will still all be there.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't got anything right either. I keep thinking they're a good football team. So, You know, I think that they're going to win, and I'm jinxing it. I mean, you and I both are, again, and there's no real jinx, but, like, you and I are just blind. We've bought in too much this year. I mean, we've both bought into the idea that this is a special year for this team, and that's what's going to happen. And so it's kind of reckless for us to jump ship now just because they're 1-3. But I think you and I both, you know, kind of hit on it. Like, this isn't a Super Bowl team right now. Like, this is a team that needs to figure out how to make the playoffs, start stacking wins, and then go from there. And, you know, until they figure that out, then then we do have a slight issue, and that's what maybe the concern is. But I think they win this game. I think the running game and defense shows up, and we see a little bit of what fans have wanted to see for a while, and this team become a little more physical and you know, run the ball and stop the run.
All right, let's wrap up the show then. That'll be it for this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We will not be with you next week. I will not be in phone contact. I will be somewhere else in the world with my wife between the Thursday night and the Monday night game. No worries. I will be watching the Thursday night game, and I will be present at the Monday night game. So no worries there. But Seth and I will not be able to do a show next week. Maybe I can, you know, I will have internet on my ship, so maybe I will be able to get a few words in and put up an episode of something, but it won't be with Seth. So all you get, maybe, but probably not worth listening to anyway. So but that's a wrap. It's probably not worth listening to then. So, but maybe not, but 2 weeks, we'll be back in 2 weeks, talking about hopefully Cardinals having one on Thursday night and on Monday night, hopefully,
definitely,
and maybe, and hopefully the season's not
two game winning streaks coming.
We still want you guys listening to our show and appreciate it. So that's a wrap for Rise Up Sea Red tonight. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jesri. You can find our show pretty much anywhere. We're trying to put it everywhere. So we're on Facebook, Rise Up Sea Red. We're on Twitter, Rise Up Sea Red. Featured on RevengeOfTheBirds.com, on CarsWire.com, on Blog Talk Radio, and also on AZ Sports 360. Or sports360az.com. Go Cardinals, and hopefully the season isn't over by the time we come back.
Have a good night, everybody.